It's called Superior Seventh.
So we tell. It looks like, you know, a few music of yours that I was happy to listen in once, you know, has, as far as I can guess, very similar idea of something continual, which yes. always is like, she was a visitor, she yeah, was a yeah, visitor, yeah. she was a visitor.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
a, so, yeah, I like to make a, a sound that goes on for a certain length of time. But the sound and then work with things within that sound. So if you make a sound like an orchestra sound, or you make a vocal sound, or you make a sound that has a certain duration, and then it allows you to work within that sound. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it's not dramatic. It doesn't go from here to there to there to there.
This was, I studied very carefully. The only one I had.
Yeah. This might be interesting to you in the future if you ever have a need to expose certain ideas. I made an opera. I made a very peculiar sort of opera for television. That is the characters are my friends. David Berman, Philip Glass, Alvin Lucier, Gordon Mumma, Pauline Oliveros, and Terry Riley, and me. And each character has like 2 hours, a portrait of, each piece is like, each 2 hours is a sort of little, it's a little theater of that composer. I found a special place where the composer looks very weird. I mean, it's very peculiar to that person. And we talk, I control the rhythm. And there's a printout of that text so that you could always make the Russian subtitles.
I see.
If you want to. I mean, in other words, in other words, there's an hour, like, of David Berman on top of an island in California. Like, there's an hour of Philip Glass surrounded by children in New York City. There's an hour of Alvin Lucier in the most amazing situation. There's an hour of Terry Riley in the mountains with a goat. And we do this little piece. And he talks. There's an hour of Pauline Oliveros being transformed from one kind of woman into another kind of woman. She does a transformation with makeup and all this kind of stuff. So you could always take, then there's that hour, and then there's the second hour of the music. Just the music.
May I ask you a question? It seems like you are very involved with the text. Okay. So this, on the border of music and speech or phonemes, which are musical, so micro, not intonations, but you know when we speak, we use other kinds of intonation.
I know. It's intonation, you know,
It seems to, like, you know, in Italy for 30 years ago, there was Studia di Fonologia in Milano.
Yes.
Where Berio or the other people, you know, where
there
were omaggio a Joyce, homage to Joyce, but you know, this Luciano Berio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Ligeti did articulations, it was something in between speech and music. It seems
to be very
important.
Very beautiful.
No, did, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Very beautiful.
Oh, that's late. No, it's very. Yes.
And then there is the other thing that I would, you know, perestroika. If I have this opera, the second one is called Perfect Lives, and that's 7 half-hour episodes. And I'm afraid that's defies translation.
So you move in the Joyce direction. Ulysses can be translated, but Finnegan's Wake cannot.
No.
So you do your Finnegan's Wake, yes. What will be the next step?
The next step, I'm writing. There's a group of operas that have never been made for TV, but I've performed them a lot. They're called Atalanta, Acts of God. And those are about our. There are 3 of them, and those are about our. This is American origins, in our ethnic origins, or our Not really.
I've read about
ideological origins. So there's one about the hero is Max Ernst. One, and there's one hero is an uncle of mine who was a legendary storyteller. And then one of them is about Bud Powell, jazz piano player. And those are, say this, collections of anecdotes, historical anecdotes, they're about the past,
uh-huh.
but they're not true, fake uh-huh. anecdotes,
I see.
And each of the characters has a central anecdote, and there's a sort of cluster of satellite anecdotes around that one. So there's the Max, Willard, and Bud. And then I haven't. We performed that a lot, and I made a lot of records of it. I never made a lot of recordings. I haven't yet done a final tape. Then I started on a set of four pieces, again for television, that are about, I don't know how to say this very clearly. It's, if I say it, it sounds too pretentious, but it's like, it's my version of ideas that I've read, that I've gotten from somebody else. And I'm using the ideas and the techniques of thinking of four kinds of writing. And one of them, called Improvement, Don Leaves Linda, and I think that in this year I will make that will come out on Nunsuch. And that's about...
you improve the other people's ideas.
My interpretation of a woman named Frances Yates, who was an amazing scholar, of the beginnings of science. She was a scholar of Giordano Bruno and Ficino and John, the beginnings of science when you go from the Middle Ages into modern times. And the Kabbalah and all the different versions of early science. I read, she's a great, great scholar, a great authority on Bruno, Giordano Bruno. Mm-hmm. The second, so that opera is based on her ideas. The second one is based on the ideas of an author named Carlos Castaneda.
Yes, sure, I know.
Who is, I think, not a real person. I think I found the person who was actually Carlos Castaneda. I think I've identified the real Carlos Castaneda. I think I found him.
Oh, fantastic.
He doesn't know I found him. This is like a spy story. He doesn't know I found him, but I found
him. Oh, yes,
I know who he is. I know who he is. I figured it out.
There are some esoteric circles in Russia which do appreciate a lot of Castaneda.
So this is the second one. Is about the writings of Castaneda. Because Castaneda is a very, very interesting author. That person anticipates a lot of that so-called postmodern pastiche techniques, but in a very cartoon style. No pretense, no silliness, no cult of the ego or anything like that. Just like straight ahead writing. Just technique. That's why he has to use a pseudonym. And it's amazing books. They're really quite peculiar.
I read only one.
Peculiar books because they're sort of like cartoon ideas. And the third one is about ethnic, about, what do you call it? The literature of a ethnic group, you know, the way people talk to each other. Yeah. And so I found this cult. There's a, in the United, in the Southwest, there's a large group of automobile clubs, young Hispanic people. Mm-hmm. They're called the Lowriders. They're considered to be sort of criminals. And they have a huge oral tradition, and like, you know, the way they address each other. It's kind of like a literature version of graffiti. They're very interesting technique of writing. And so the third one is about that. Yeah. And the fourth opera is about business writing. You know, like corporate writing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Corporate writing, or like, you know, the magazines that are about business.
Yeah.
Well, corporations. Like,
yeah, there was a wonderful quote by T.J. O'Rourke, a comic writer here, who said he was reviewing a book on how to succeed and how to do great in business.
Yes, Carnegie.
Not Carnegie, but it's always some new version of that.
Yes,
kind of how to become even richer and more successful.
Yeah.
And he defined that communication in business is the art of how someone with nothing to say says it to someone who doesn't want to hear it.
Yes, I know what this is.
Oh, it's a great literature. It's a great, it has fan clubs. You know, you have these things like the Fortune magazine.
Fortune.
It's about like, sort of like, it's sort of Sports Illustrated of business. You know what, it's about
the biggest dollar in their pants.
Yeah. It's, so I read all those magazines for like 10 years. I really studied those magazines. So the fourth opera is about business literature.
And you tell it it looks like an art form, this Fortune kind of style literature.
Yeah, and you survived brain damage.
Oh, they're good. They're great. It's great literature. I mean, it's like funny.
So
anyway, those four operas, and I've finished them now. I'm just trying to produce them. I'm trying to actually, right now, I almost got improvement. The first one, I've almost got it done. I've got all the voices recorded. And I'm trying to finish the orchestra right here. And the second one, I've made all three of them. Well, the second one, I've made a personal demonstration tape, but I haven't tried to do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
The third one, I'm trying to produce it in connection with Spanish television, because it's all about Hispanic people in America. And the fourth one, now you might want to be involved in this. This looks like a sales pitch. This is the fourth one. You might want to be involved in this. The fourth one, I'm going to start a magazine which is a sort of do-it-yourself opera kit. So you subscribe to the magazine, and I send you a template or a format for writing an opera, like they do television, you know, or they do movies now. It's all templates, and, you know, I send you the template, and you write your own opera in this template, and you send it back to me, and I publish it and send it.
Wonderful.
So you get everybody's opera, but it's always in this exactly the same template. So, in other words, everybody can communicate with each other about.
Fantastic, a little bit like, you know, Kagel had an idea of privat. You know, but this one is this is coming.
So I'm going to try to. Actually, I think we're going to start this magazine, which is just in other words, you would get in the mail an opera from him, and everybody else would too, and then, you know, then you would write one and I'd publish it and it would go to everybody.
So people are involved in the creative process on a very serious level. It's not like composing a nursery rhyme or
it's
difficult to compose.
88 minutes. It's a lot of writing.
Mm-hmm.
Should
they have an instructions? Should there be instructions or even some score or?
Yeah, exactly. A score, a four. It's just like it's like playing this machine. Mm-hmm. You get a book of instructions.
Yes, yes.
And if you don't do it, it won't work.
Mm-hmm. Don't work. So this is
wonderful.
This, because you know, sometimes it seems that say new music is new art. lose audience, you know, and because people are frightened, well, it's too serious, I can't understand that, you know, something, they don't go to concerts and so on, and this will force them this.
You know, now that idea, you hear about that idea all the time, that people don't go to concerts. I'll say one thing for your tape, and this is true, you have to believe me, the audience for new music is the only audience there is, except for pop. Every other audience has to be convinced. You have to sell, you have to pay a lot of money to make people go to the Metropolitan Opera. Now you go to the concert tonight, like at Phil Niblock's, right? You pay $3, you go to the concert. That's popular, that's very popular. 50 people will go, 50 people will go to Roulette, 300 people will go to the Kitchen, blah, blah, blah. All over town, people are going to concerts. Do you know that tonight, at the Metropolitan Opera, every seat at the Metropolitan Opera, it costs $500 to have a person in that seat. The United States government pays $500 so that you can sit in that seat. Every night, every performance, every seat, every seat, every performance costs $500 of the government's money. So that's not popular. Shit, I could give away $500 bills, you'd have a lot of people.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Much more than one can expect here.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it costs like $150 for the New York Philharmonic, $200 for the New York, every seat.
Yes,
so that's not popular. They're buying those people. They're buying the audience.
For prestige, for...
They're buying the audience. So that's not... The audience is not interested. If you didn't give them $500, they wouldn't come.
They wouldn't come, yes.
They'd go to Phil Niblock's.
I see.
No, I'm telling you, new music is the only audience.
It's only...
Everywhere you go in the United States, there's new music. Everywhere. And there's an audience. But if you go to the opera, there's no opera, you go to the symphony in like Omaha, it's a disaster. You go to the symphony, you go to the opera in like San Francisco, it's a disaster.
Even here.
You go to the opera here, it's a disaster. You go to the symphony in Detroit, it's a disaster. But everywhere you go, there's new music, and it's good. I'm telling you, you gotta believe me. The journalists have just totally turned around. They made a lie out of something that's true. You know what I mean? Everywhere you go, people say, oh, well, it's hard to get audiences for new music. It's not. Everywhere I go, it's sold out. Phil Glass gives concerts. Like, 1,000 people come. They stand up in their chair.
I watched 10,000 there.
People full house. Everywhere I go, everywhere you go, people are there.
Yes. I watched 10,000 airplanes in Zurich last year, accurately last year, a year ago, and it was maybe 2,000 people in the audience who paid about $30 for a ticket.
Everybody, everywhere you go. So and it's true. You know, you go to St. Louis and you give a concert and the place is full. Place is full, and afterwards the journalists would say, well, don't you have trouble attracting an audience? And I say, well, the place is full. It's packed. Jesus Christ.
No, it so seems like...
It's true.
I'd like to have $500 and to stay in the Metropolitan Opera for an hour.
$500 tonight.
Tonight.
$500 it costs for every seat.
For each seat, yes.
15 years ago, I don't know what the number is now. 15 years ago, a man who was the most important man in philanthropy, you know, foundations. He was not a rich man, but the man who was like the most, he was the most intelligent, the most important man. He said, it cost $80,000 to put a new piece into repertory in the New York Philharmonic. A 20-minute piece. Just a 20-minute piece. Ordinary, not the whole concert, just one piece. Like a George Crumb piece. Mm-hmm. $80,000. That was 20 years ago, 15 years ago. I don't know what it cost now.
Maybe $100,000.
Yeah, right.
So how much does a 1 minute cost?
It's just crazy. It's crazy for us to be, I mean, it's, maybe it's necessary. I don't know about that. It might be necessary, but it's definitely neurotic for the United States government to be spending like all this money to convince people that they like something that they don't even need. You know what I mean? Who needs Mozart in Omaha? Really? Mm-hmm. What they need is Pauline Oliveros.
Yes, sure.
You know what I mean?
Even when they have Mozart, it's not Mozart. It's
1 hour
of rehearsal.
Oh, God, it's public rehearsal.
20 minutes of mediocre performance.
Yeah.
Mediocre sounds like you have on the record much better, by Cinevedeci, for example, playing the same thing. Yeah.
I hate to interject. Once Ludoslavski was being honored by his birthday at the New York Philharmonic. So Zubin Mehta was conducting the work, and then Ludoslavski was going to give a New York premiere of a cello concerto. Mm-hmm. So Mehta used
Rostropovich was the...
No, it was a young Polish cellist.
I know him.
Anyway, Mehta took too much time because he's not a good conductor anyway. So then Ludoslavski had about an hour and a half to prepare the piece. This was the only rehearsal he had. But Mehta took an extra half hour, so he had 1 hour. Ludoslavski was working, doing what he can. He didn't finish, and then the clock hits 12 or 1. Suddenly, all the musicians stop, because according to the union contract, they can't go further. In the middle of a note, they stop, and they start putting their instruments away, and he went like this. This was to honor his birthday. Yes. You can imagine the performance afterwards.
Well, there's a wonderful show. Takemitsu was having a new piece performed by the San Francisco Orchestra.
Right? That's true.
And after the concert, Tom Buckner, this is a commissioned work, too. Tom Buckner went backstage and was standing with somebody, it was a friend of mine, who said, "What did you think about the performance?" And Takemitsu said, "It was better than the rehearsal."
Yeah, better than the rehearsal. Stravinsky likes saying yes. I'd like to say this like this. Oh, I have no questions later. You told everything possible, thanks, and if you permit, I'll use some parts of it in a radio program, and then maybe transcribe something and publish an article of how I stayed here and, all that, if you don't mind, of course. I'll do this, and if you're interested, I'll send you a copy, of course, of the magazine, of the program itself, and maybe you'll a little bit surprised I don't ask some commentaries on music itself, which will be played from the CDs, but I never do, because I want my listeners to be involved in it, and I just put the most the things people want me to tell, because I don't, this my program is not a, what's that? It's not a conservatory. It's not a composer's class for analyzing.
No.
I just put different things and try to them to compare. Maybe you'll be. What do you want as a surrounding? What kind of ethnic music? Usually,
me?
Yes, because usually my program. Yes, you,
Mr. Schlo.
It's called Contrasts. It's usually has not less than 3 departments.
Yeah.
That should be said. Avant-garde music, some kind of forgotten ethnic music, and some kind of jazz, or even sometimes pop, if it is.
Well, what do you mean by ethnic? I mean, like a
traditional folklore or something.
Of anywhere in the world.
Hmm?
Of anywhere in the world.
They were. Yes.
In the world, or just Russia?
No, all over the world is.
You like? I like in the jazz world. I like Bud Powell.
Bud Powell, okay.
Very, 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 very wonderful, funny.
Oh, Bud Powell.
I always like, he's very funny. Very good. Ethnic music. God, I don't even listen to ethnic music.
Well, just an idea of it. Maybe not even ethnic.
The only ethnic music I ever listen to is Mexican.
Mexican, well, why not? Why not mariachi well for the tuba?
Mariachi, I love the tuning of mariachi.
Yes, yes, I do. And I like this, well, Tijuana sound when not Herb Alpert plays, but when it's natural, what is.
Yeah, well, they're you know the Mexican, what do you call it, what they call now? They're like, it's like a band that's four times too big. There's like 20 guys and they all play trumpets and it's like brass bands and it's...
Brass band, yeah, this is mariachi.
Yeah, but big mariachi. Like
big mariachi,
20,
yes.
20 people.
Yes,
yeah,
20.
Yeah.
They have a special name for it.
I love that. Music.
Yes, sound of mariachi trumpet is in a way related to folk music in Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania and all over. Maybe you'll even notice that some Bartok music, when it is folk, it's a little bit like mariachi.
Yeah. But the tuning is, I don't know where they ever got the tuning. The tuning is so amazing. It is so unbelievable. You know, mariachi, the brass tunings of mariachi are almost, you can't really believe that it's that extreme.
Yes.
I mean, it's so emotional, you know.
So now I understand why I hate so Herb Alpert. Because he has this and tunes it in a well-tempered, like European. Now I know that.
I know.
Thank
I know.
You. This idea just came to me.
The tuning in the big mariachi bands is almost unbelievable. Maybe I'll give you a record. When do you go?
15th, December 15th, next week, next Saturday.
Oh, I can make a tape for you. I want to keep this record.
Oh, thank you.
I got a couple of records, though, in Mexico a long time ago. Maybe you have them now. Do you have those bands?
Sorry?
Do you have, at your radio, do you have those records?
Oh, no. No.
I'll
must search
tape.
For them here, for Big Mariachi. I think I have some Mexican music.
I'll give you a tape. I'll make a tape of those.
Thank you.
Mexico, then I got to give you Perfect Lives tape. And then you got the Bud Powell. You've got Bud
Powell. Yeah, sure, I do. I do. I taught jazz.
Yeah.
Well, I do this now.
Yeah, he's very funny. Yeah, very funny.
Yes. Bud Powell and Thelonious Monk are my favorites in jazz. I wrote sleeve notes for Thelonious Monk and Bud Powell records, which were published in Moscow. I prefer, you know, this was Hallucinations. I like it that very much.
Yeah.
And which is a little bit Mexican. And as far as I remember, it has a Mexican
un poco loco.
Okay, it's beautiful. I like it.
I haven't heard that in a long time. I mean, I used to listen to that a lot, but I don't listen. But of all those ideas, I think Bud Powell is the most. For me, it's the most interesting.
Yes. Dante, you know. Now I realize that his keyboard style is a little bit related to yours. You have a lot of keyboards.
Yeah.
So, and you know, this is not a virtuoso romantic music. This is a very, what's that?
Obsessive. Well, you know, his, a lot of Bud Powell has in it this quality of... public obsessiveness.
Is it?
That obsessive.
Obsessive, I understand, yes.
That is somehow related to what I was saying, you know, about the involuntary speech. A lot of involuntary speech. One of the main strange things about involuntary speech is its obsessiveness. It's primitive, like primitiveness, like in primitive painting, that obsessive attention to details, which when you become more, you know, cosmopolitan and more sophisticated, you're supposed to relinquish that obsessiveness. It's supposed to be a sign of bad manners, you know, that obsessiveness. And, but I think the thing that's fascinating about Bud Powell in particular, and also Thelonious a little bit, is just, you know, get an idea and just don't let go. You can't force, you know, the public opinion cannot make Bud Powell
go on to something else. Like, you know, we're tired. Why don't you go on to something else?
No, yes, yeah, Oscar Peterson can play 10 choruses more, but not the power.
Yeah. That's the quality that I like.
Yes.
That obsessive. That total obsessive.
I've read about it. His improvisations are very closed in form. Just a finished piece of music.
Yeah.
You appreciate it as an improvisation and at the same time as a written piece.
I know.
That's it.
And a lot of that obsessiveness and the solo, or the solo, the piano playing has the quality of being said over and over and over and over and over. Many, you know, every night. Same idea. Work on that idea. Work on that idea. Work on that idea. You know what I mean?
I see.
Never give up until you explore the idea.
Mm-hmm.
I love that saying.